This episode is sponsored by Rebel Studio. Episode 34 of the Board Game Geek podcast, where we geek out about board games, the mechanisms behind them, and the people who create them. I'm your host, Candace Harris, and I am so happy to be here today with Elaine from the No Pun Included YouTube channel and the Talk Cardboard podcast. How's it going today, Elaine?
Yeah, good, thanks. I learned a very important lesson this morning.
What is that?
Which is, if you want to toast some bread, do not, under the grill, do not use baking paper because it will set on fire.
Oh, no.
You will start blowing on it, and blowing on it will not put out the fire. Blowing on will make the fire bigger.
Oh no!
So your toast will almost end up in the kitchen sink.
Oh jeepers.
So I learned that lesson. There you go.
Okay.
That's some advice.
Hey, it's 2024. Like, this is, you know, you're just starting off to learn. I'm sure we're going to learn so much this year. But thank you for that tip for the rest of us.
You are welcome. I am delighted to be here. Thank you so much for inviting me.
Yeah. No, I you know what? Like, I have since I got into modern board games, been watching No Pun Included, and I just, like, love what you and Efka kind of bring to the table in terms of, like, board game content creation. I mean, everything is just, like, so entertaining. It's bold, thought-provoking, hilarious.
We try our best.
No, you nail it. And it's also really cool because I know you're a musician, right?
Right, I play guitar.
Yeah.
And banjolele and ukulele.
And you write
But they're
cool
pretty
songs.
Much the same thing.
You write cool songs.
Sometimes.
But it's always...
sometimes.
Yeah, it's always cool to connect with fellow gamer musicians, too. One day we need to just, like, have a band. We just need to have a super group, you know?
Of board game musicians.
Yes.
A super group.
Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
All sorts
I'm into a super group.
Yeah, all sorts
like
of...
Like the board game version of the Traveling Wilburys.
Yeah.
Sorry, I interrupted you. All sorts of
No, that's okay.
I'm so excited by that thought.
We need to do it at some point. This is just something I've been, you know, I always think about when I meet different people in the industry, like Henry Audubon plays music, Eric Lang mm-hmm. plays music, mm-hmm. you know, we're going to do it.
Do we have a bassist?
Eric. Yeah.
Eric excellent.
Will, yeah.
Oh, good stuff.
Yep. Okay. I'll play drums. Yeah.
Excellent. Yeah, I know you play drums.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
Thanks. Thank you. So, like, I don't know. I think I mentioned this when I was talking to you and Efka at Essen this past year. But back in 2019, and this is pre-BGG, Candace. Like, I think I was on a game night at that point, like, a couple of times. But I decided to go to Essen. My partner and I, we were like, let's go to, well, it was my idea because he's not like a huge board game enthusiast like I am. But I was like, let's go to Essen. You know, this is right around our anniversary. Cool little Euro trip. And our friend Joe ended up coming out and like sleeping on our hotel floor. It was like so cool. That was like my first big board game convention too. And
wow. What a one to go for,
it's
right?
It's massive. Yeah.
It's huge. It's so overwhelming when you first go to Essen.
Yeah. And I think like in 2019, I had my whole list of exactly what I wanted to pick up. Like I remember mm-hmm. I was getting like PAX Transhumanity. I was getting the new, at the time, the whatever the last, I was about to say Terraforming Mars, Terra Mystica expansion, the Merchants mm-hmm, one mm-hmm. was coming out then. And
oh, yes.
Yeah.
Yes. We queued up for some time for that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That one always had like a massive line.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And then, but one night we were like walking back from dinner with our friend Joe, And we were walking by and you and Efka were outside and we were like, oh my gosh, that's them, you know? And we walked up and said hi. And I think the way we approached from the dark, we like, I think I had a hood on. We probably looked like we were going to rob you or something. But then once you realized we were just board game fans and, you know, board game fanatics, we were starting to talk. And I remember you two had just played Magic Maze on Mars. Like, what happened with that game? Like, I remember it dropped there, and then I was like, oh, I'll get it in the, you know, when it comes out.
I don't know. I know there was some maybe production issues or rule book issues with it, but I don't know what happened with that game. But, you know, I don't actually remember that happening at all. I don't remember.
Yeah.
Seeing you, I don't remember
being
approached by this hooded figure. I don't remember being terrified of a hooded figure at any point during my Essen trip.
Yeah. So,
but I'm not good at remembering phases at all. I have a problem with that. So, you know, you could have been, you know, the queen and I wouldn't have remembered that you were there, honestly. But
yeah.
But now I know you, yeah. You fortunately more. So now I will recognize you. Like, we saw each other at Essen last year. So that was brilliant.
That was really nice because we actually got to sit down and like chat a bit.
And, a little bit, yeah.
Yeah. That was really, really, really nice. And yeah, I think it's just like one of those things also, besides just, you know, at that point, like you guys are, you know, super established content creators and you're probably very busy. There's lots of people, you know, but like we were just, you know, these three Americans coming who don't know anybody, but all we know is we know your YouTube channel. And we were like, oh, you know, so,
you know,
stuck with,
you know, it's always, always nice to talk to people about board games.
Yes.
It doesn't matter who they are. As long as, you know, as long as you're having this nice conversation with them, it really doesn't matter whether they're, you know, head of Essen Spiel or whether they're just someone who plays very casually.
Totally.
It really doesn't.
I totally agree with that. So this is the first episode of 2024. So,
hey.
So I want to wish everyone an awesome 2024. I know I have some personal New Year's resolutions related to board games. Like I need to cull my collection and I really want to try to like play the games I love more, you know, and just... My collection is out of control right now. And it's partially, you know, my job. I play a lot of new games and
yes.
talk about them. But still, the games that I own, I can get under control, you know?
Yeah, I think so. You're going to try and keep them generally under control rather than doing like a massive cull
both.
Like once a year or whatever. You're both.
I want to do a massive cull.
Okay.
I want to do a massive cull, but then I want to, yeah, keep it under control going forward. So my goal is to by, let's say, mid-year, like at least trim off like 200 games.
Uh-huh. Just keep it in check. Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of places now that will take board games too, you know, like libraries and board game cafes. And they're always looking for schools,
yeah.
right? Sometimes hospitals, even, or places like that. They're always looking for, you know, good new games to have. So rather than just having, you know, one or two, you know, I think it's great.
Thanks.
As you know, my resolutions are kind of along the same line, really, is that one of them is kind of to play games for fun more, which sounds a bit silly, but because yeah. it's our job,
yeah.
There are some games that we really like that we just never get to the table because we think, oh, okay, well, if we've got time to play a game, we should be playing
work
XYZ
yeah.
game because this is for our job and we need to play this for the review or the podcast
right,
or
right.
whatever, you know. So I think that's one of them is just to play games that we really like
yes.
for fun.
Yeah.
and also, you know, like you said, being more mindful of what you acquire and not just for the financial element, but also for the environmental element
yeah.
and, you know, just not creating this kind of economy of waste.
Yeah.
100%. So, yeah, they're kind of very similar. But also to be, I think, a little bit like more personally kinder to myself when I'm playing games and not to go, oh, why did you do that, Elaine? That was, what a silly move you did there. You know, just to enjoy the game.
Yeah, don't beat yourself up too much if you make mistakes.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
No, that's all really like, yeah, great things to kind of keep in mind. I was like thinking about it too, you know, over the holidays a bit, but you know, life is hard and there are so many people out there suffering, and there are a lot of people who suffer with a smile, so like you wouldn't even know it. So one thing I'm personally trying to do, and I'm just, you know, encouraging other people to do, is just try to be kind to one another. You know,
I think that's all you can do, right?
Yeah, like just small acts of kindness and positivity can mean so much. Like I'll tell you, and I might have said this before on this podcast, but like the very first day I went to my first game convention here in LA, I had no game friends. And I remember just walking in there and feeling like a lost puppy because everybody had their friend groups. And, you know, I was, and I came home and I felt so defeated, like almost like it was my first day at a new school. And eventually I had my friend Jennifer Schlickburn saw me wandering around at a convention the next time I went. And she's like, come here, come like sit down. And I was like, that was so cool. And I just watched her and some people finish a game of Root because Root had just come out at that point.
Nice.
And then she was like, let's play a game. And I just think about that sometimes when I'm at conventions, like stuff like BGGCon, which are like play cons. You see people walking around, you know, I'm going to definitely make a better effort to say, hey, like, do you want to play if there's a spot or something, you know, just in case there is that person who's there for the first time and they're brand new and they don't know anybody. And
it makes such a big difference. I've definitely been to board game cafes where even as someone who plays a lot of games, you walk in and there's no idea of what you're doing.
Yeah.
You're not greeted by anyone. You don't know where the games are. You don't know how to kind of rent the games. You know,
Or
do you rent the games? What do you do?
Just
play your own? Like, what do you do?
Yeah.
So, and that's really off-putting.
Yeah.
So just having that kind of little bit of generosity and
awareness,
personableness.
Yeah.
Is that a word? Personableness?
Yeah, I like it.
Is just, thank you. Making up words, is just makes all the difference to everyone, whoever they are. I totally agree. That's a really nice thing to do.
Thanks. It's in the back burner here. And, I'm just going to try.
Well, I mean, you don't want to come on too strong, right? Like, hey, you
come know, on over come here.
Please. And they're just like trying to get a cup of coffee from somewhere, like, you know.
I'm not trying to play.
No, I get
There's
it.
A fine
I
line.
It.
There's a fine it. Line. Anyways, since we're kicking off the new year together, and we've clearly already played all the games that came out in 2023, you know, we totally played through those months ago.
Of course.
No. But today we're going to discuss a few 2024 releases that we have on our radars. Like, these are games that we've maybe heard a little bit about that we're just looking forward to checking out and playing. And you know, obviously we don't know everything that's going to be coming in 2024.
This was so hard for me because I barely remember games that I have played, let alone games that are kind of this ethereal concept
of like
that are
what's
only
coming.
Pictures on the internet or whatever, you know. Yeah, so.
Yeah, there were a couple of games that, you know, as I closed out last year that I was like, oh, I can't wait for these games to come out. But in other cases, I had to think about this a little bit. So anyways, before we start talking about new games we're looking forward to in 2024, I'd love to hear what you've been playing lately, Elaine. So let's jump into Fresh Plays.
Sorry, I thought there was a pause. I thought I saw on the itinerary there was a small pause. Okay. We've been playing a lot of Sleeping Gods, Distant Skies, ooh, which was released last year in 2023 by Ryan Lockett, published by Red Raven. And it's, we've been playing over quite a few different campaigns because it is a campaign game. It's in the same universe as Sleeping Gods, but it is kind of a standalone sequel, like a sequel-alone.
sequel-alone, I love it.
To Sleeping Gods. Yeah, I know. I think Efka came up with that word and I've just jumped on it.
I love
really
it.
Like
I'm going to start using it too.
But yeah, it's set in the same world. So it's kind of a map adventure game where there are different locations on the map and you will be going to these locations, reading passages from the booklet and maybe fighting monsters, maybe doing skill checks because you have different characters that all have different skills and you can add to these skills with cards. And you are progressing through this adventure, and without spoiling anything, because this is like right at the beginning, mm-hmm. You've gone through some kind of weird portal. Ooh. And you are trying to get back to this portal by bimbling about on this map doing adventure-y cool things. And we've been really enjoying it because we really liked Sleeping Gods. We did a whole video on Sleeping Gods, in fact. And this, for me, feels like different enough to feel fresh, but also quite cozy, like similar enough to feel quite cozy because I know what I'm doing with it.
Yeah.
And I also like games with a good narrative. There is very much, I also like games where there is kind of a full forward mechanism. So even if you are not passing the skill checks, you still probably will get something. You might take some damage, or you might not quite get what you wanted, but you will get something. And all the characters are very different. And they all have kind of little backstories, and they are being fleshed out a bit more and more as we go through the story. And it feels different from Sleeping Gods because rather than being on a boat as a crew that you're all managing together, mm-hmm. you are on an aeroplane, and you're kind of, you've kind of been thrown together a little bit more. So you're not quite as chummy and let's all do this together. You're kind of a little bit more in it for yourself.
Oh, okay.
But we haven't, you know, gone through the story enough to find out why that is, or, you know, who these people are enough yet. But we've been really enjoying it.
That's really cool. I still have not played Sleeping Gods, but, you know, I've just heard nothing but great things. And actually for a friend's wedding gift, one of their friends, close friends, was like, hey, give me a game idea. And I was like, get them Sleeping Gods, like the first one. And
without even playing
it. Yeah. But I just like, I was like, I think I know the couple, and I'm like, they like lots of narrative driven games like that. And I was like, I just heard great things. So he ended up getting it for them as a gift. And last year when Matt and I were on a trip, they came to our house because they don't have a big enough game table for it. Mm-hmm. So they just like camped out every night. They would come to our place and play Sleeping Gods, and they loved it. They loved it. So that's cool to hear, like, you know, how it kind of compares to the original one. Now, let me ask you this. As somebody, now I don't know when I will ever get to try this, but I, you know, I would like to. Would you recommend starting with the first one, or does it matter?
I don't think it matters.
Okay.
They are different enough that you don't need to have played Sleeping Gods at all, because the rulebook explains perfectly well how to play the game and what you do in the game. It's just that you can skip bits of it if you already have played Sleeping Gods. So I don't think it matters. It's, you know, they're a little bit different in how they are presented, and Distant Skies is much tighter than Sleeping Gods because you are not managing this boat. You don't have kind of fiddly bits to do with that, but like Efka really likes that, having to manage this boat, and I like that less.
Okay.
So it really just depends. I don't think you by any means you have to start with Sleeping Gods. I think you could go straight into Distant Skies. Yeah.
Good to know. Okay. Well, that is Sleeping Gods, Distant Skies. I have, Elaine, I don't know if you know this about me, but anybody ooh, who has listened to the past two episodes of the podcast, of this podcast, knows this about me, but I have been just like hooked on KeyForge lately.
I did know that because I listened to this podcast.
Okay, so yes, yeah, so I you know, I played it for the first time at BGGCon in November, and I just like just I still have not like I think about it every day. I like crave.
Wow.
Yeah, it's something's got me hooked. But anyway, so I've still been playing that, but I'm not going to talk about that. I'm going to talk about a game that I played on Christmas Eve. So we have a tradition for the past 5, maybe 6 years, where on Christmas Eve, we play Dead of Winter with our Ooh. Friends Cassie and Jake. And it's like a thing. We'll usually cook like a pasta meal and then we'll play into the wee hours of the night. So this year, we were getting together earlier in the day to play some games. And I was like, you know what would pair nicely and be just like a nice light experience? Why don't we try Freelancers, a Crossroads mm-hmm. game, which is another plaid game from Plaid Hat Games. And I forget if this, I think this came out at Gen Con, if I recall. I think it came out at Gen Con and the publisher provided a copy to me. I think it was at Gen Con, not at Essen. But at some point, I got a copy from the publisher, and I had been curious to try it because the same group of friends, we played a little bit of Forgotten Waters, and mm-hmm. we had just a great time with that. But Freelancers is a game that, again, came out last year in 2023. It's designed by Donald Schultz, and it plays with 3 to 7 players. And it's basically a re-implementation of Forgotten Waters, which is this kind of like story-driven game that's also you use an app. Like it has narration in the app and it tells you like what to do, what page to turn to sort of thing. But allow me to read the introduction to this game because it'll give you just an idea of what you're getting into. Congratulations, humanity is dead. The bad news is that all they left behind is their garbage and a broken gig economy. That's why we need freelancers like you who are ready to take any job, no matter how loathsome. As a freelancer, you will delve into ruins, brave the wilds, and slay hordes of hideous creatures that litter the dark, forgotten corners of the world, all so you can gather loot and return home, ready to blow it all and start over again the next day. It's a lousy gig, so it's perfect for the likes of you. So
I love the humor in these kinds of games.
The humor is just hilarious.
You know, Forgotten Waters had one of the greatest cards I've ever seen in any board game.
What so was it?
Forgotten Waters had a card that was, it was called like Old Pair of Boots or something. And it's the text on it was ugly but functional, just like you. And I love that kind of humor.
That is so great. Yeah, I'm trying to remember. Like we haven't finished Forgotten Waters. We joke throughout the year. We're like, yeah, we forgot about those waters because it's just like maybe one day we'll get back to it. But this game, you know, I didn't even prep and like read the rules ahead of time because I'm like, we'll just go through it. And one of the cool things is there's you can play through the tutorial in the app. So, you know, and learn the game as you're playing it and everything. But the idea is, which is really cool that you brought up, like, you know, sleeping gods, because mm-hmm. These are kind of slightly similar, you know, in that they're narrative driven games,
right,
where you're kind of creating a character and doing skill checks and stuff. But you build a character and you're basically playing through a quest. And as you play through the quest, there are like these different color skill dice. So you're kind of leveling up your character so that you always roll a d20. But like if you have whatever skill you're checking, if you have leveled it up, you'll get a better die. So there's a D4 that's like the most basic, you know, up to, I guess, a D12, I think, is the highest bonus die. But I was like, I really liked how you can, like, you'll pick a type of character and then kind of a trait to go with it. So I was a troll gambler. And I know we had an imp witch. I forget what the other ones were. But yeah, you put these two sheets together to like kind of build your character. You come up with a name and then there's like a Mad Lib thing where you read your backstory. And this game was just, we had such a fun time with it. Like it was just, I think we played it for about 4 hours, 3 or 4 hours. And we ended up, we were trying to find this dragon and take down this dragon. But there are lots of different kind of quests you can explore. So there's
like side quests.
Yes. Yeah. Like, so, well, not even side quests. Like now that we played a whole quest together, the four of us can now do a different quest with different characters, like complete, like it's a new setting. So they have a bunch of sheets so you can change which characters you are. Obviously, I don't know if it's obvious, but you don't have to play with the same group. You know, it's not like a legacy kind of campaign.
Some games
game.
You do, right? Yeah. 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 Some games, they ask you to play with the same people and stick with the same characters. What did you think of the voice work on the app?
The voice work was great. I swear I recognized one of them. And I thought it was, is it David Barry? The guy, he's one of the guys from like the IT Crowd.
Oh, I don't know. Sorry.
Matt, well, he's.
Oh, Matt Berry.
Matt Berry. There we go.
Matt Berry.
Yes. Oh, Matt Berry. Okay. Sorry. Matt, my Matt and I both thought, we were like, is that one character Matt Berry's voice? Maybe. And I Googled it. I couldn't find out. But yeah, I thought like that's the other thing is, thanks for bringing that up. The narration. Like all the voices, like you'll listen to little passages, you'll have encounters with people and you'll play it. I had it on my iPad and then I had it coming out of like a Bluetooth speaker and it just really like sucks you in. And the humor again is just like really, really fantastic.
I love it when they do have the voice narration because it is optional.
Yes,
right?
You can read if you want.
And if you're not confident to read out loud, particularly with all the different voices and, you know,
character. Yeah, like they're all character right, sounding. Yeah.
Yeah. And putting the emphasis in the right places and blah, blah, blah. Then I think it's quite a nice thing to have.
Yeah, we love it. And my friend Cassie generally likes to read and she'll do fun voices like when we were playing Clank Legacy together. But this, we just like we hit play and it just it's so well done and it's so entertaining. And this is very light. I think the what they were trying to achieve here, they nailed it, like having this like light RPG experience that can be played in an evening, you know.
Yeah,
like
right. And experienced by newer players.
Yes. Yeah. Because I don't have much RPG experience at all. But I've been enjoying like dabbling in these entry kind of gateways.
It's a more guided RPG experience rather than just putting someone in a character and saying, well, what do you do?
Yeah.
Without knowing anything. You know, it's a very guided experience and I appreciate that about it.
Yeah, yeah, me too. And this one, and I don't even know, have you played it before, Freelancers?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Okay.
We played it, we dipped our toes into it. We played it for about 4 hours, you know, like you, but we felt like we'd only just dipped our toes into
it. Okay. Did you get to the end of your quest?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah. Yes. I'm like, I think there's so much more to kind of be explored with it. And I think I know a lot of different people who are like lighter gamers who could just, you know, it's a different kind of experience. And I also liked how like everybody, besides creating your character and stuff, everybody takes on different roles. So like I was the game master. I was in charge of like running the app and I was also the influencer. So I had the little influence board in front of me. So everybody has a level of influence in relation to each other, which usually like breaks some turn order rules. And sometimes it's like the person with the most influence does this. And there are things you can do in the game to gain more influence to jump ahead of people. But like Matt was had the role of like finding our path on the map and drawing where we were going and stuff like that. And then another person had those wheels, like the weapons kind of.
Right.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Yeah. It's nice to give people roles, particularly if they are new or newer to RPG experiences, to have something to focus on and yeah. Right. So I like that about it also.
Yeah. Yeah. So that is like if anybody's curious to kind of dip your toes into a lighter RPG experience, and just like if you're looking for
it's
a
funny.
Laugh, yeah, if you're looking for a laugh and you know not trying to take a game night too seriously, you know, freelancers. It was cool. I'm definitely looking forward to seeing, like, trying more quests and, you know, hearing other character voices and trying this one more. So that's Freelancers, a Crossroads game. What else have you been playing lately?
We at Christmas played Spots. We took it to my parents' house because we stayed with them for Christmas. So we were playing with my parents and Efka's mum. It was released 2 years ago in 2022 by Alex Haig and from CMYK. And it plays 1 to 4. So we played it as a 4-player. Well, we kind of played it as a 5-player game, but I was playing it in tandem with Efka's mum.
Oh, no.
So we're playing it together.
Nice.
So, but it's a game where I don't know if you've heard of Spots.
I have heard of it, and I've been curious to try it, but I haven't tried it.
Yeah, so you have a bunch of dog cards, and they all have spots on. And dice also have spots on. So there's this kind of Yahtzee-ishness to it, where you are rolling dice and you are trying to match the number on the die with a space on one of the dogs to cover up the dog's spots.
Oh, okay.
So it's a pretty simple idea. You're rolling dice, placing them on your dogs if they match the numbers. Mm-hmm. But it is so very hard to do. it seems really simple. So you start with 2 dogs. And there are a bunch of actions that you can do. You know, some of them let you roll 3 dice and then optionally roll another dice, or some of them let you get little bones, which are like the ability to re-roll dice, things like that. But it's so hard to do. To win the game, you have to have 6 complete dogs.
Oh.
And it was just so hard because you can bust. Because if you can't place one of the dice, you have to put it in this yard, right?
Okay.
In this little yard, which is just a space on your board. But if the spots on the dice add up to more than 7 at any point, you completely bust. You lose all the dice that you've put on any of the dogs that you've got out.
Oh my goodness.
And you have to kind of start again.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, we really enjoyed playing it. Everyone, like my parents enjoyed it, Efka's mum enjoyed it. But it's just a game where it looks very simple, but actually to achieve the goal is not so simple. It looks like there won't actually be that much to it, but there's so much decision making within, like, which action do I take? And once someone has taken one of the actions, it flips over and you can't take that. No one can take that action again until there's only 1 action left. And then they all
reset.
They all kind of unflip.
Okay.
And the action that wasn't taken gets a little bone on it. So whoever does take that one next will get that kind of added incentive
to
take that. We didn't do that well. Like I said, I was in tandem with Efka's mum. My mum won hands down. She was like a rolling fiend, just like, yeah, I've got this. What she did was to build up her bone pool so she could re-roll the dice.
Yeah.
And so when she didn't roll well, she was like, well, I'll just spend a bone, re-roll them again. But you can't pick the dice that you are rolling. You have to either just, you know, not roll any or re-roll all of them.
Oh,
right. So I mean, from the pool, not the ones that you've already placed.
Right,
on the
right, right.
They're safe, kind of.
Yeah.
Until you bust.
But you're not getting to just say, "Oh, I'm just going to re-roll this one die."
Right.
Got to do them
right.
All. Okay.
No, it was hilarious though, you know, because and all the dogs have like this the super cute artwork. All the dogs are really adorable, and one of the dogs is a cow, because why not?
Why not?
You know, why not? I don't remember that the cow's name, but they all have super cute names, and they're all doing little poses, and you know, it's just you know, one of the dogs, one of their spots is just their nose. It's very cute, and it was very silly, and we all enjoyed it.
Cool, yeah, that's one that I've kind of had my eye on. So it looks so cute, Spots, and it seems like clever with the dice. Like putting the spots on the dog cards, you know?
Yes. Yeah, there's a huge like push your luck element to it because, you know, one of the actions is to roll 3 dice. And you think, well, that's obviously really good. But then if you roll the 3 dice and then don't roll anything you want, That's bus. Bad. So there is a definite push your luck element to it that I underappreciated.
Cool. So that's spots. Nice, nice. So another game that I recently played for the first time is I was kind of like during the holidays a little bit decompressing a little bit and chilling. Just we kind of kept to ourselves after Christmas, and Matt got into this video game that I got him called Starfield. So he's hooked on that. So I was like, let me take this opportunity to play a solo game. And I played Siberian, another 2023 release, and it's designed by Shadi Torbi. And if you know that name, you've probably played one of his other games, Onirum, Urbion, Castilian, Sylveon, Nautilion, Arion.
I have played none of these.
Okay. Stellarion.
So I'm looking forward to hearing all about this.
Yeah. So I think back in the day, early on, I'm pretty sure it was like Z Garcia from Dice Tower. I watched a video he did on Onirum and I was like, oh, I want to try that game. And I really enjoyed it. And then the production on these games, all of these games, is so fantastic. Like the art, and they're small boxes, like they're small square boxes, and they're all like, I own them all now. And I don't even think I've played them all. Cause like, sometimes I'm just like, it's like usually just an insta buy for me, and they don't take up too much shelf space. So I'm not getting rid of any of these, but anyway, this one is published by Impatience, and you can play with two players, but I think most people typically play it solo. If you play with two players, it's cooperative. And I'm not exactly sure of the rules for playing with two, but this game, this particular one, Siberian, it takes place in the factory in the Oniverse. So the Oniverse is the world that all these games are kind of set in. And so the devious cog sabotaged all the machines, and the failsafe system is basically close to like, you know, just going away. It's not functioning. Things are not good, Elaine. We got problems. So to win the game,
you are to the rescue.
Yeah, we're going to come to the rescue. We have to repair all of the machines with our robots. And if you can't repair a machine on one of your turns, and you don't have like a fail safe token to save you, that's game over.
Oh.
So basically you have this deck of 50 robot cards, and they have five suits, or they're five models of robots. And then you have 25 machine cards that are level one, level two. So the deck is kind of stacked. So the level two ones come later. And first you'll go through the level one machines, and the level one machines are just, you know, there'll be five of them on the table, turned face up at the start of each of your turns. And you have a row that's called the factory row, right? The factory row, I think. Yeah, the factory row. And then you have, to the right of your robot deck, you'll have five robots face up. And that is the platform. So when it's your turn, you are going to try to use the robots you have to do one of three things. I guess not one of three things. You're using the robots to do two things, but there's one other thing you can do. The main thing you're trying to do is repair these machines. So each machine card has like requirements on the bottom, and it might be, hey, you need to spend two of this specific type of robot, and then you can repair this. Or the robots also have a size to them. So it's like, hey, you might need two size one robots, and then you can repair this machine. So, and when you're doing that, you're discarding these cards. So you have these five cards in front of you, and you're trying to think about like, okay, if I use these two, I forget the name of the purple ones, like we'll just say the purple model robots to fulfill that machine.
But let's say grape robots.
The grape robots. I like that. I like that. If I spend these two grape robots, I can repair that machine. But this machine over here is looking for size three. And one of those grape robots is size three. So maybe I want to use that robot with this other size three banana robot And, you know, so you're trying to figure out, it's like very much a hand management game where you're trying to figure out how to play the cards. Because the other thing is, besides repairing robots, like discarding robots to repair a machine, not repairing robots, repair the machines, you can also take one of your robots, discard it to trigger its power. So all of the five different types of robots have a power. You can take a robot and say, I'm going to trigger the ability of, let's say, Grape Robot, okay? Mm-hmm. But the ability depends on how much I've strengthened that ability. So at the beginning, they don't have abilities at all. But once I start repairing machines, I can discard those repaired machines, because that's my experience pile, to now advance my different robot models. So now I'm making them more, their abilities more powerful.
Right. So is there like a programming element to it, or is it more just like a planning element to it?
It's more of a planning. So, so at the very beginning, none of your robots have any ability because they're just blocked right now by these cogs. Mm-hmm. But then as I start repairing some machines, I have them in my experience pile. Now I can spend machines to start leveling up the card abilities for the different robot models. So, you know, for example, there's one robot that lets you like add a card to your platform row. And like, maybe if you get that ticked up higher, now I can add two cards, or maybe I look at four cards and choose one. You know, like you're powering up the card abilities of the robots, but you have to decide which ones you're going to like level up, because you're also trying to like spend your robots to repair the machines. Mm. And then you're like, okay, now I have these two repaired machines. I could either tick up two of these card abilities one level, or I could try to repair another machine. Now I have three cards, and I could take this one that's like already level three and tick it up to level four and make that even cooler.
There's like balancing elements of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Oh, so like, really cool. Yeah, lots of like really, really interesting like decisions you're kind of faced with, like puzzly decisions of like, hey, you know, then when you're deciding which of your robot models you want to kind of advance so you trigger better abilities, but you're also like looking at your row of robots and you're like, huh, well, I could discard this one to trigger this ability, and then maybe I'll repair, you know, that robot now that I got some more cards, but now I want to maybe trigger the ability of this robot to do something else. So you're using the robot abilities to help you. You're building an engine.
I see.
But the order in which you do things and the way the cards comes out will vary. And
So there's some luck in it as well.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say Okay. Yeah. Yeah. Cause it's, you know, you're drawing cards and, but you do have a lot of, kind of agency over like the order in which you do things. So like the first game I played, I lost. I got kind of close, but I lost, which I'm like, that's fine. You know, I want a challenge, you know, I want to be challenged. So then I immediately reset it. And, you know, one of the things is like when you're advancing the abilities of the different robot models, I think the first game I tried to kind of do them all evenly. Like I'm like, okay, let me move them all to level two. And then, and then eventually, but there are benefits to doing that, because now I have more flexibility of like, oh, I could trigger that and do something cool. I can trigger this type of robot and do something cool. But if you specialize in one and get one all the way up, you get extra fail-safe tokens. So, and that's what's going to kind of keep you alive if you're not able to repair a robot on one of your turns. So there's a lot going on. And like one of the robots, the command bot, lets you prep machines. Basically, at the most basic level of it, it's like discard five cards. And now one of the machines you're trying to repair has one less requirement. You need one less robot. But like as you level that type of robot model up, it's like
it will get better.
Yes, it'll be like discard two cards and you can reduce, you know. So it's like it's stuff like that, but you have to figure out like which ones you want to like advance and how far, but also keep up with repairing robots. And here's another tricky thing. You can only reshuffle your deck one time. So you have to think about how fast you're burning through your robot cards, because the minute you need to reshuffle, you turn your little battery card to the dead battery side, and that's it. And then you cannot reshuffle again. You have to just play out the cards that you have. But yeah, it's really, really, like, this might be, again, I haven't played all of the games, even though I own all of these, like, Oniverse games by Shoddy Torby, but this might be my favorite one.
Wow.
Yeah, there's just something really cool with the way the hand management works. And, like, all of these games, the production is so cool. Like, the art style is awesome. When you open the box lid, like, to get into, like, the rules and components, there are, like, these, like, little gates that you'll open. And it's so like being cool.
In a proper factory.
Yeah. But, like, all of these games
like
have that. All of these games have that really with their own art style. There's just, like, really cool presentation and everything. They also all have expansion modules in the box. So now that I've won a game, you know, I don't want to get overly confident. I probably want to play it again and see if I can win again. But then I'm going to start adding in expansion modules. And so I would say, like, if you like solo games and that are, like, kind of, like, puzzly, only take about, like, 30 minutes to play, check this out. It's Siberian. And if you've never played solo games and you're kind of curious, I think any of these games are, like, a good place to start because, again, the rules are always well done. They're really cool to look at. They only take 30 minutes to play, and you can kind of scale them up with the built-in expansion modules for, like, lots of variability and replay value. So.
Sounds cool.
Yeah. That is Siberian. And yeah, like I said, I'm kind of like, I should just play one of these each week. And so I can play them all. Cause yeah, I haven't played them all.
We've played lots of solo games cooperatively.
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes they come with, like, two player modes, but quite often we've just played it as a solo game.
Yeah.
But
talk through the decisions together. Right. Yeah. That is another thing that's really fun, to, like, take a solo game or, you know, co-op game and play it with another person or other people. Cool, cool, cool. That is Siberian. And now a word from our sponsor. Attention, human listeners. This is Commander Whiskers from MLEM Space Agency, hijacking your airwaves for a particularly important announcement. You've seen us conquer your living room. Now watch as we take over the cosmos. Brought to you by the brilliant mind of Reiner Knizia, MLEM Space Agency is a game where strategy meets interstellar cat shenanigans. Pick your feline astronaut with unique skills and launch into the great unknown by trying to match your dice rolls with each step of the journey. Do you hop off to explore a planet or dare to whisker it all by venturing further? With easy-to-learn gameplay and a stunning roll-up playmat, this game is perfect for families and gamers of all stripes and whiskers. Whether you're a seasoned space explorer or a newbie in the galaxy, there's fun for everyone. So get ready for a fur-raising adventure that's out of this world. Secure your copy of MLEM Space Agency and join the feline space race today. Now returning to your regular podcast. But remember, we cats are always watching, now also from space. Okay, so Elaine, are you ready to talk about what you dread? Upcoming games.
Oh, I see. I thought we were going somewhere else for a minute there. Yes, I am. Yeah, I am.
Cool.
I've done my homework. Yeah.
Cool. Yeah. As I said, like, there were a couple of games which are going to be the ones I mentioned last that I instantly came to mind when I'm like, oh, I can't wait till 2024, you know?
Yeah. There was a couple of games that I thought might be coming out in 2024 that are not coming out in 2024 after all. So they had to be struck off the list, unfortunately. But these are in no particular order.
Okay.
I just want to mention that, right? Like, it's not like, you know, my top looking forward to and then my least looking forward to. It's they're all games I'm looking forward to. And what I was trying to just pick different ones, right? Rather than have like, because there are games that I'm looking forward to by designers that I like their games, or, you know, publishers that we generally enjoy their games. But I didn't want it to just be a list of, you know, Reiner Knizia games or whatever. You know, I wanted it to be have the games that maybe spoke to me a little bit more, that do different things.
Yeah, I love that.
I'm interested in the game itself and what it might do.
Cool, you know, so, cool.
Yeah.
I ended up with a few honorable mentions.
Yes.
I like to do this periodically.
I would like to hear about
those. To squeeze
in
more, you know? So one of the honorable mentions I had was The Elder Scrolls Betrayal of the Second Era, which is a big chip theory game that's coming out. Mm-hmm. And I demoed this at Gen Con. And I did like a 2-hour demo, and it was just super cool. I mean, I'm a big Too Many Bones fan, and this was kind of reminiscent of Too Many Bones, but also different. And it had some of what is like the, like what I saw in like Hoplomachus Victorum also. Mm-hmm. And I don't know, I'm not like a big video game person, so I've never played like Skyrim or, you know, Elder Scrolls. So I don't know that world too much, but I was still so immersed in it. And I'm really, really excited about that. But one of the reasons it's an honorable mention and not on my main list is because I have so much Too Many Bones content and Cloud Spire and Hoplomachus to still
do. Do you have the chest?
Yes. Oh, yes. Oh, I have the Trove chest. And I'm like, I don't know how that thing is ever, like, I feel like that's like permanently in my shelf right now.
I see.
It's heavy, but yeah.
It's the perfect size for a Kallax square.
Yep.
So,
that's what we have. Yeah. So anyway, I just want to mention that because I am really excited about that. And I think that is supposed to come out at some point this year. So that's The Elder Scrolls Betrayal of the Second Era. And of course, I'm so excited about the upcoming Keyforge set that's coming in March. It's Keyforge Grim Reminders. It adds like new mechanics where you're interacting with your discard pile. And I just put it as an honorable mention because I've just been gushing about Keyforge so much recently. But I am hyped for that. But anyway, let's start with, in no particular order, but your number 5.
Right. So my number 5 is, and I know you've played this game, it's Molly House.
Yes!
So feel free to jump in at any point on this one. Designed by Joe Kelly and Cole Worley, published by Worley Good Games. The player count is 1 to 5. I don't know how it differs between playing one and five. I've seen playthroughs of it, but I've only seen the playthroughs at like 3 players. So, I didn't understand half of what was going on. So, but this game is essentially about joy and creating joy and putting on events and festivities for joy. And in fact, the potential winning condition is to have the most joy.
Yeah.
Which I think is just such a wonderful idea. I love that because in so many games, you know, it's to have the most points or the most resources or the most this sort of money, whatever.
Right.
And this is joy. But I'm kind of burying the lead a little bit here because this game is about social history and specifically queer communities in 17th and 18th century London. And I know we've got 1,000 games about that already.
tons.
Right? But I thought this one looked particularly well done. It looks very interesting. The art is amazing for a start. I love how it is done. But it's a game that you're playing semi-cooperatively. So you're working together to try and put on an event decided by one of the Molly cards. And there are various different cards, vice cards in the game. There are 4 different types of vice cards, and 3 of them will kind of help you to be putting on this event or doing things towards that or giving you like influence or reputation. But one of them is a police card, which will kind of try and arrest you, and like a constable who will try and arrest you and make you feel guilty. But the ultimate goal is to keep the Molly House open over 4 weeks. So if your Molly House is open after 4 weeks, you know, you potentially win the game, unless you are the infiltrators and you are working against the rest of the players,
right,
to try and have this house closed. And it also means that if you are an infiltrator, you get some kind of lenience with the constables, with the police. So the game changes very much depending on who you are, because any player has the potential. It's kind of social deduction-y type thing,
right,
where any player
right.
has the potential to become one of these infiltrators and potentially be found out for being that. But I love how this game looks, but I love how it covers a period of, you know, my history. It takes place in London, right? That we just don't learn about,
right.
like at school or socially, really. We just never learn about it. Or what we do learn about it at school or whatever is, you know, so out of the ballpark. It's like in another county. Like it's not even, it's not right. So I love how this looks at different aspects of my history that, you know, we just don't learn about. I love how this game is made from the ground up as well. So, you know, a lot of games, although they're not abstract games, the setting could almost be anything.
Right, right.
Like I mentioned on our podcast when we were, you know, when we cover horse racing games, it doesn't necessarily have to be about horses. It could be paint dripping down a wall.
Right.
You know, it's not the horses that really matter. It's just the getting to the finish line.
Right, right.
But whereas this is, everything is centered around the Molly House and the experience of trying to make something that will make people happy, but also trying not to get caught, which is kind of a horrible concept,
right.
in a way, right. but it is part of, you know, what happened,
right.
and still in a way happens now.
Right.
So I think it's something that's really important to look at. I love how you're working together as a team, you know, not as a team really, but as cooperatively, collaboratively to try and do this.
Yeah, to put on the events.
I love, to put on the events. And that the different places on the board will do different things when you visit them.
Yeah.
I love how it looks and how it kind of operates. And I love also how the cards, you know, the game is so kind of covert in a way. Because, you know, in other games, if the game is going to give you a sheep, you draw a sheep card, right? Whereas these cards, you know, quite a lot of them just look like a regular deck of cards. They're just, they have suits, you know, they have numbers on them. Some of them just have people on them. But then you look at them a bit more closely and they say things like a cheeky glance, you know, and you're suddenly getting like little snippets of what these vices mean.
Right.
You know, they're not, nothing is overt. You can kind of decide amongst yourselves how much information you are sharing as well, because I know that there are certain rules within the game, like you can't show each other your hand of cards, but you are playing out the cards onto the table and you are showing each other little snippets of information, and you can discuss certain things and show people different things just to kind of, but it's all very covert, you know, and I think that is very representative of what probably happened in these Molly houses. Like you were trying to tell people things, but in this very subtle way.
Yeah Well said. For someone who hasn't played the game, you know a lot about it, and you know that, but I agree with everything. I mean, obviously I can't relate to this being like my hometown kind of history, but I'm just I think it's like it's such a unique, obviously the theme is unique, but like the way from, I played a proto, I think the last time oh my goodness, is the last time I played the prototype at Gen Con? It might have
been. You are on the backer kit page. That's how I know you've played it. Because there is a quote from you on the backer kit page.
Yeah, it's been a while, but I think I've played it twice, partial games of prototypes, and I know it's since, you know, just keeps getting developed. You know, improvements are being made, but I find it so unique, and it's like the not only just the theme, like the historical topic, but yeah, the way everything you're describing about how the gameplay works, I'm like, I can't really say another game that feels like this. And that's like one of the things I think just, you know, like Joe Kelly brought this to the table and designed this game. And
they
Molly House was one of the games that was in the original Zenobia Award contestants, know? And I think I'm so glad that Whirligig and Cole picked it up and signed it, because I know, like, just from Cole's other games, especially, you know, especially the Whirligig games, the treatment of it in terms of the art and just like the unique gameplay, I think it's going to be really, really good. And I'm really, really excited about this too, even though it's not on my list, but I saw you had it on your list. So I was like, cool, we got it covered.
I really hope that, because I know like Cole and the team were a little hesitant to pick it up because it's so out there. It's like you said, it's something that's not been done before, and I know they were worried that, like, would people, how are people going to respond to this? And because the response has been so positive, you know, I'm hoping that that tells them that there is an audience for that kind of game, and like with their other game John Company as well, you know, like there are people that want to know more about this, you know, these different aspects of history. And you know, I'm not saying that a game can tell you everything about a subject, is always the right way to tell you about a subject, but it can always be a springboard. If you think, I didn't know anything about this, you know, it's giving you a little bit of information and you can go off and learn more about it,
100%.
Of something that you might didn't even know existed or didn't even know how something operated. So I love that about it.
Yeah. And I think that's part of what, like, my fascination with so many historical games, you know, is like, I will find a game and maybe sometimes even before I play it, I'm just kind of captivated by, hey, I didn't know anything about that aspect of history. But then when I play the game, I you know, I can't tell you how many times I've gone and picked up a book and I started reading it, but I didn't finish because that's I have book ADD. But
do you ever listen to audiobooks?
You know,
because I find those really helpful.
I need to try. I always tell myself that I can't because I'll like kind of focus in more if I'm reading the words myself. But I should try. I should try.
I tend to put them on when I'm before I go to sleep. So I'll put it on for like 20 minutes before I go to sleep. Because if I'm reading myself, I tend to switch off a little bit and I end up reading the same paragraph.
Oh, I do that too. Yeah, and I'm like,
it's not gone in.
Rewind that page.
But if I play it while there's no other input because the room is dark, there's no other sounds, nothing else is happening, it's quiet, you know, and I'm planning to go to sleep. So if I start feeling sleepy, that's okay.
Hey,
you know,
I might try it, Elaine. 2024, new year, new me.
Just nothing scary. don't listen to anything scary before you go to bed, because I've done that. Ooh. And then you have bad dreams.
But yeah, like I definitely appreciate that and 100% agree. Like, you know, a board game that's about some point of history is not going to like tell you everything, but it does definitely spark curiosity for me to like want to learn more about it. And I start watching documentaries and I start picking up books, even though I haven't fully read a lot of them. But I am very curious about it, you know, and I think that is something that's really cool about games like Molly House and John Company.
Yeah, I agree.
The first game, so that is Molly House. The first game I am mentioning is Ironwood, This is a new game that's coming in 2024, obviously, from Mindclash Games. It's designed by Mael Brunet and Julian Chaput. And it's a two-player game that got announced right at the start of PAX Unplugged. It's a two-player game, but there's a solo mode. And this is a new one. This is going to be the second one in Mindclash's Mindclash Play line. Like, did you and Efka ever play Astra?
I don't think so.
Okay.
No.
I really liked Astra. It was this constellation game that was very light, but like really good. Not enough people are talking about Astra, but yeah, I almost forgot about it myself. But Astra was the first game. So Mindclash is known for these big, heavy, you know, very thematic games. And so they started this sub brand called Mindclash Play, and Astra was the first game in it. I quite enjoyed it. And Ironwood is going to be the second one, which is a little more complex, I think, than Astra was. But this is an asymmetrical card dueling game. And of course, you know me with my Keyforge and Flesh and Blood and everything. I like these kind of games. So, and also just like if you say asymmetry, you know, they had me at asymmetrical card game,
yeah,
you know.
Okay.
But one player is going to be playing as the like ironclad side. And one of the neat things is that player will play with metal components, whereas the other player is going to be playing as the woodwalker side. And all of their components are wood.
Oh, wood?
And I saw, good job. I saw the prototype, and I was like already kind of blown away by the production of it, even though it wasn't like the finished version of the game. But this game, I didn't actually get to sit down and like play a demo game of it, but I'm just really excited about it. It seems really cool. Like, I love the asymmetrical gameplay. I like that there are different goals, and the way that the two different sides move around, interact with the map is a little bit different. And I'm excited to see Mindclash kind of like branching out into a new space with like kind of a card game like this. But, you know, there's a board and everything. So there's definitely a board component to it. It is a board game, but it's kind of driven by these cards. And it just looks really, really cool. And I like these kind of games. And I'm generally a fan of like Mindclash games and like what they're producing. So I'm very excited about this one.
Nice.
Ironwood. Nice. Have you seen this one or heard anything about it?
I haven't. No. No, nothing at all. So but no, we never played Astra either. So but that sounds interesting. I like how I like asymmetry.
Yeah.
Do you have a favorite faction in Root?
Oh.
Because there's only one right answer.
No, I don't have a favorite.
I'm kidding.
I actually haven't played the latest Root expansion that came out last year.
No,
but
no, me neither.
I kind of like the lizards.
Oh, yeah.
The culty lizards. Yeah.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. I always like the birds.
Oh, the birds.
Because I like
great.
Programming.
Yeah.
Right. So, but yeah, I appreciate asymmetry. And if you're saying this is a kind of smaller game,
yeah.
I think my kind of dream game in some way that I haven't found yet is a smaller, really meaty game.
Mm.
That you can really get into, but it's very small.
Okay.
So that sounds really cool.
Okay. Okay. We'll have to make sure somebody designs that. But yeah, actually it's cool that you bring up Root, because the board for Ironwood, if I recall, like it kind of reminded me a little bit of Root, where you're like moving around from like what looks like kind of different clearings sort of. So they're, but yeah. Oh, I love Root too. I haven't played it in a while, but that's definitely not getting culled from my collection. And I need to like finally play the newest expansion.
We're coming across as Culwelly fans a little bit.
Yeah,
here,
we are. We just keep sprinkling.
Accidentally.
But I am. All right, so what's the next game on your list, and is it a Culwelly game?
It's not.
Okay,
surprisingly,
so we're not talking about coal.
not exclusively, no. This is a game called Tycoon India 1981. The designer is Siddhant Chant. The publisher is Zenwood Games, and it plays 1 to 4. But I think that it's probably better with a slightly higher player count from what I've seen of it.
Okay.
Because if you're playing with like 2 players, there are bots, and I don't know quite how well they work, having never played the game.
Gotcha.
But this is a big economic simulation type game in the style of maybe like Brass or something like that.
Cool.
You know, have you ever played Brass?
Yeah, only yeah, Birmingham.
Okay. Well, yeah, like that. But rather than taking place in like the past, it's in living memory, 1981, and you are an industry tycoon in post-colonial India. Right, because you're trying to build up the economy and the industries after some people came in and did some horrible things from another kind, and then now they've gone away. I don't know who they were, but they've gone now. So you're trying to you're trying to build up the economy, and there is so much in this game, you know, just like in a lot of big economic simulators. There are so many actions that you can do. And at first it looks like there are only 6 actions you can do, but actually one of those actions gives you like another 10 actions.
Nice. So, you know, we know those games.
Right. You're buying shares from other people.
Ooh,
just like
I
in like an 18XX type
yes,
game
yes.
Where you're buying shares, but you're buying shares in their industries. You're trying to make more industries. You are putting little factories, plants on the board. You are also trying to play as the tycoon. There's 2 different bidding mechanisms in it as well.
Sounds amazing.
One of them will be in every round, but one of them won't because there's like variation within the different rounds. But when you are the tycoon, it is like a huge bonus because the game only gives you like 14 actions in total, because there's only 7 rounds, you get 2 actions per round, right? But if you are the tycoon player, you get an extra 3rd action. So rather than having 2 actions, you get a 3rd one, and you are also the first player of the next round.
Okay.
Right, so it gives you this massive bonus. But there's just so many things about this game.
It sounds awesome.
Yeah. It interests me because it's a period of history again. And I say history, you know, it's like not that long ago,
right.
But I know nothing about it.
Yeah.
And one of the great things that the rule book does is that it has like little snippets of how this works in the real world. So you can kind of relate that to what is going on in the game. And I love that because, again, like I was saying with Molly House, you know, it's not going to give you like deep, in-depth knowledge of what was going on, but it might spark something in you to like look into it a little bit more. But you know, there's just so much going on. There's more player interaction than you would imagine, because you're sort of buying shares from people, and there are spots on the board that you might block with some of your shares. The shares get more expensive, you know, the more they're sold or the more that you use. It looks like it's, like I said, you know, there's not that many actions in the entire game. So it's going to be incredibly tight to do what you want to do and what you want to achieve.
It sounds so cool.
I know.
It sounds right up my alley.
Doesn't it just?
Wow.
Yeah. There's the other thing is, the other really cool thing is that there is not really just one way to win. So there are two different. There's influence and assets. So influence is like a track around the board, and then assets are from the industry cards that you are buying, right? So if you are the highest, if you have the most at the end of the game for both of those, then you will win the game. But if you only have the highest for one of those, then it kind of just makes you eligible to win. Ah. You need this other thing, which is favors, in order to kind of tip you over to win the game. And favors, again, you know, all of these things you get from various cards, you get from policy cards that you know you're kind of changing the policies that are being made within the industrialization. It looks incredible. The artwork for me, like when you have this kind of game, for me the artwork, if it's functional, is more important sometimes than very beautiful, because there is so much to look at,
right?
And sometimes if a game is like has a lot of color or a lot of like ancillary things on the board, my brain just goes into a frazzle. Yeah. And I can't cope with it. So the artwork looks quite functional, but not boring. The artwork is nice, right? It looks pleasant to because you're going to be playing this game for some hours. So you want something that's nice to be looking at, right? Yeah, it looks great. And also, I've never played anything by this designer, and we don't see things coming out of like South Asia or India that much, or certainly not that I have played. So I am really looking forward to this. This is one actually that I didn't know anything about until Efka put it on his list for our podcast that came out at Christmas, and I hadn't heard of it, and then I looked it up and I was like, wow, this looks incredible.
That sounds so cool. Tycoon India 1981. I look forward to trying that one. Yeah, thanks for putting that on my radar. So the next game on my list is Rock Hard 1977. This is a game about being an up-and-coming musician and trying to be like the best rock star in 1977. It is coming out from Devir, and it's designed by Jackie Fox, who is a friend of mine. And she's been on Game Night before a bunch too, but she used to be a member of the 70s band The Runaways. Which
I know! How cool is that?
It's so cool. And I remember when Jackie, soon after we met, we're both working on games, and we just kind of would trade off some stories. But I'm so excited for a couple reasons. Number one, obviously, I'm so stoked to see more music-related board games out there. Sure. I think, I've kind of said this here and there, but I think there might be like a little bit of a music game renaissance coming. You know, we've had so many nature games over the past couple years.
Don't knock the nature games.
I'm not knocking them. I love what they've done, what they continue to do to the hobby. But I'm also like, I'm ready for some other things. And
I agree with you. Yeah. I agree with you. Like, there's been so many about farming or this or that. I'm also ready for something new. Yeah.
And like Luthier is a game that, where you're crafting instruments. Like, it's not on my list, but I'm like really, really excited about it. And I also like haven't really said anything publicly, but I signed my game last year as well. And I'm not going to give any more details, but I have a music related game coming out too. And I'm just like,
I look forward to
thank
that.
Thank you. Thank you. I'm really excited too, because, Jackie and I are both in LA. We're both female musician designers, rhythm section too. Mm-hmm. And so like one thing I talked to her about, I'm like, I would really like love for us to, like, when both of our games are out, do like a little release party together. And so I think we're gonna try to do something just to kind of like celebrate that and both of our games when they're both out. But yeah, but I'm just like so excited that, and Devir, knocks it out of the park with their production and everything.
Right.
So I'm really, and I actually haven't played her game. Like, we almost played it on TTS a couple of times. Now she has played my game and actually gave me some really cool feedback at some point, just from her experience of, going through development and stuff with her game. But yeah, I'm just really proud of her and I'm excited about it. And I can't wait to see like more and more music, different types of music related board games come out.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Me
so too. That is Rock Hard 1977.
My next game is Pax Penning, which is just, to get that out there, it's nothing to do with the other PAX titles at all. It's just the name.
It's not the sequel to PAX Premier?
It is absolutely not. No. It is nothing to do with them. Okay. It is just PAX as in the word peace, right? So it's just the title, as far as I know. So the designer is Matilda Simonson, and the publisher is Milda Matilda Games. The player count is 3 to 5, so it's minimum 3 players. So it's one that might not come to our table immediately, because there's only 2 of us, but there's not a huge amount of information about this game. She is keeping it kind of tight to her chest, and I think that is because there has been a long time in production, because there's been a lot of changes that she's had to do, because some of the things that she wanted to include, she later found out were not true, because it is a historical game.
Ah.
It takes place at the end of the Viking era, and it's kind of about the first Christian king of Sweden. So it's okay. Like well in the far, far, far past, right? But I know she's had to make some changes based on falsisms that have come up.
Okay.
So she wanted to make sure that it was right. But having said that, it is an abstract, it's a completely abstract game. So I don't know if you've played her other game, Turncoats.
No, I haven't.
No. I think it's in the same sort of style as that, but I think more fleshed out. I think it's a slightly bigger game. But all her games so far come in, rather than being a board, they come in like a pouch that you can has a string around it that you can tie up, and then you can just take it with you.
That's cool. I think, that's awesome.
Certainly Turncoats was designed for like LARPing, so you could just take it with you. But this is a game, and I've only seen pictures of it on the internet, mm-hmm. like tantalizing pictures. So, and there's not a huge amount of actual gameplay, how it works. But I have a feeling that it's similar to Turncoats or The King is Dead. And I don't know if you've played that.
I love The King is Dead.
And that is a game that I love. Yeah. Yes. So rather than being like on a side that you are trying to win, you know,
right.
by being on that side, you are kind of engineering it. So you have the amount of beads or whatever on the side that does win.
Yeah.
Does that make sense?
Yeah, totally. Yeah. It's like the area influence where you can, everybody can be on whatever side, and you're trying to have the most on whatever side ends up winning, but no player represents
each side.
Yeah, right. Yeah, I love
right.
that.
So you're trying to put the beads. It is beads in this case, and
nice.
There are different types of factions, so they're in different colors, and you're trying to put those out on the board to have this kind of area majority or area influence. But you're also trying to keep those beads to yourself so that you also have the most amount of those beads at the end of the game. I said beads a lot. Sorry. But does that make sense?
Yeah. That's right up my alley.
Right. I like a small kind of abstract war game.
Mm-hmm.
So that immediately appealed to me. And the fact, sometimes I don't like it when a game doesn't come with a board, you know, when it only comes with like a play mat or something.
Right.
It's a board game. Why don't you put board in it? So maybe technically this isn't a board game because it doesn't have a board, but the mat is functional because you play on the mat, then you
pack it
then
up,
you bunch up the mat. Right. Yeah. You just bunch it up and walk off, which appeals to me immediately as well.
That's
no,
so cool.
No fiddling about setting things up too much, you know, or packing up at the end. You just pick it up and off you go.
Yeah, I love that. And it sounds like even with the beads, I'm going to say it again, beads. With the beads, like it sounds like between that and having that kind of like cloth mat, like that it'll create like just a unique tactile experience too, which I really like.
Yes, me too. And I know that she has a deep fascination with her own history because she is Swedish.
Oh.
So she has a big fascination with the history of her own country and isn't necessarily, you know, representing all the things about the history that were, you know, great about it. You know, some things happened that weren't as good.
Right.
So she doesn't want to shy away from that sort of thing.
Very cool. Very cool. Pax Penning. Yeah. This one like definitely was not on my radar, but it sounds like something that I will be like really into.
Plus all her games are kind of handmade. You know, rather than being mass produced, if you want to buy one of her games, you have to like send her an email and say, I would like this game from you, rather than just buying it off a
that makes
you know,
it even more special.
I know.
That's so cool.
I know. It feels like being part of a club.
I gotta get in on that and get my order in before I drop this episode and everybody else tries to. Very cool. I'm probably gonna just have to subscribe to the page so I can hear more updates when this one's available, or see if she has like a website or email list or something. That sounds really cool. Awesome. So the next game on my list is this is one I actually, when I was like going through and trying to think, like, am I missing something? I almost missed this. But I'm really excited about it. And it is Red Dust Rebellion. So this is a game. This is an upcoming coin game from GMT Games. It plays with 1 to 4 players. It's designed by Jared Carmichael. And it's developed by Adam Blinkensop. And usually I don't like mention who develops it, even though like developers are such a crucial, important piece of the puzzle when it comes to making a game. So like just, and a lot of people don't know who's out there as, you know, developing games, but they're doing so much important work behind the scenes. Right. So yeah, good job developers out there. Like kudos, like thank you for doing what you do to make sure these games are, you know, playable for us and working, you know, collaborating with game designers to make these games happen. But the reason I bring up Adam is because I met Adam 2 years ago, maybe 2 or 3 years ago, when I went to GMT's weekend at the warehouse event. And so he's a friend of mine at this point. And so I've never actually met Jared. I forget where Jared is from. I think somewhere in Europe. But
it's a big continent.
Yeah.
Somewhere in Europe is fine.
In Europe. but I don't remember exactly where Jared's from, but I've, you know, talked to Adam a lot and I kind of, you know, get a couple updates on the development of Red Dust Rebellion. And just one little cool side quest story here. So we were talking about, you know, RPGs and games that have that kind of RPG experience. Well, Adam and Ken Kuhn, also who works for GMT, those two guys have really like dipped my toes into the RPG world because we have last year or not. Now I say last year, it's 2023. In 2022, when we were at GMT's Warehouse Weekend, one evening at our Airbnb with some of our friends, they came over and they, Adam and Ken introduced us to Dread, this RPG, where you pull Jenga blocks instead of rolling dice. And it was just like such a cool experience. So now we have this tradition of Adam and Ken will run me and my friend Hector and a couple other people through like some kind of RPG. And it's really cool because he's like such a good GM and it just blows my mind. So anyway, so I just want to bring up Adam in here too.
Aww.
Yeah. But again, Red Dust Rebellion, I already said I love asymmetrical gameplay and I'm a big fan of the coin series that Volko Runki started. And for people who aren't familiar with the coin series, traditionally, they have been historical board games that are focused on guerrilla warfare and counterinsurgencies around the world. So there's a whole series of these games that are set in different time periods and different, places around the world, different countries. And the gameplay is kind of centered around asymmetric factions that are competing against each other. Most of them are 4-player games, so you'll have 4 different factions and you're kind of competing in this multi-layered area control struggle, and each faction has their own motivations based on the history it's representing, and then they'll have their own like unique victory conditions too. And the gameplay is centered around a deck of event cards and this really cool initiative system where at the top of the event cards, there will be a certain order of the factions. But once you take, in most cases, only 2 factions are going to like actually participate in each for each event card, like each turn. And you have to kind of decide, do I want to pass or do I want to participate now? Or is it better for me to stay for the next event? Because that's something better for me. It's really, really neat. They're also like lots of interesting negotiation opportunities in the game. Like sometimes you will have to kind of ally with people. And because why not bring up Cole Worley again? But Root was inspired by Andy and Abyss, which is the very first coin game. So like Root was very heavily inspired by the coin series. So, but again, like, I, not everybody is into historical board games. They are definitely like complex, and the GMT yes. and the development team there, they're constantly working on making them easier to digest and, you know, trying to make them more accessible. And this game, Red Dust Rebellion, is volume 13, and it is the first coin game that is not based on history.
What?
Yeah, yeah. So instead, it tells the story of the Martian revolts of the 2250s and the rise of Martian nationalism. So
it's not even just not history. It's not even Earth.
Right. It's the future on Mars. And there, wow. there are four, again, there are four factions. You know, you have like every coin game will have like kind of a government faction. So the in this game, it's the Martian Provisional Government, and they're representing Earth interests, but also trying to keep the local population happy on Mars. Then you have, then you have the corporations, like someone will play as the corporations, and you, that's basically representing Earth-controlled companies with vested interests in Mars, and they're pushing to like colonize and terraform Mars. Then you have the native-born Martian workers, the Red Dust movement, and they're kind of like demanding a government for Martians, by Martians, without Earth interference.
I see.
And they're like willing to take it by force. So, you know, there's the insurgency there. And then there's another faction that's the Church of the Reclaimer. And they don't want to repeat the old mistakes of old Earth. They're basically opposed to terraforming and opposed to like further colonizing Mars. So you have these like four different factions that are going to be, you know, having their own like interests, but some of them kind of commingling and needing to like work together to push towards their own victory condition. But I'm so excited about this because number one, I love the coin series. I love that it's like, you know, they're branching out a bit so that like people who maybe aren't so keen on playing games that are set in real history, but like want to experience like what is like some of this awesome gameplay in the coin system, you know, now you can kind of take it in a new setting that it may be more approachable and more enjoyable for some people to kind of try it out. And yeah, I don't know. I think it's going to be really, really cool. I got excited just about like reading more about it on GMT's website and BGG and everything. And I guess like for anybody out there who's, again, not familiar with coin games, I wrote an article a couple years ago, and it's called, it was when the first three-player coin game was coming out, called All Bridges Burning. And so the article is called All Bridges Burning and How GMT's Coin Series Captured My Heart. And I am going to link it in the show notes because it like tells the story of how I, you know, someone who, I don't know, I never thought I'd be into historical board games because I never was into history growing up. And I just kind of fell in love. And that article kind of tells specifically why the coin series excites me. Have you played any of those games, like the coin games?
You know, it might surprise you. I don't think I've ever played a coin game.
It unless doesn't you surprise count Rue, me too much. You know? Yeah, like not a lot of people have ventured there.
No, it's something that we've just not, because it feels like a really big
endeavor.
Yes, thank you. That's a good word, endeavor. And it's just not something that we've kind of branched into very much. But it's, you know, I do like war games. Mm-hmm. Generally, but I think what you were saying about not having been interested in history before, and this has made you interested in history. This is kind of what we were saying about these other games. You know, like it depends on the teacher and the how the game. Sorry, not how the game. How the history is presented to you as to whether it interests you and excites you and you want to learn more. You know, if it's when, you know, when I was at school, like, and we got history books and they were just pages and pages of text and then, you know, maybe one picture in the entire textbook,
right?
You know, and they're going on about things that, you know, are so far removed from your own experiences. You know, courtship in Henry VIII times. And I don't know, where even is Aragon? Where is Catherine of Aragon from? Why do I care about this?
Right.
And you know, and you're doing it in this kind of rigid setting as well at school. But when you're presented with it in this different way, in the form of a game, you know, it becomes so much more alive.
Yeah.
And it makes you want to learn more about it.
Yeah.
So, but yeah, coin is games are something that, you know, we've just not on purpose not played. It's just something we haven't. And, you know, I'm always up for new games. So,
yeah. And I would say, Elaine, too, like, the coin series definitely can be, if you're coming at it from never played and you know you're all new players, it can be very daunting. One of the things that GMT does with all of the coin series games and almost all of their games is they include a playbook. So like the very first one I got was Cuba Libre, and I ended up just setting it up because I was so excited about it, and I set it up. The playbook will take you through like several turns so you can kind of understand how each faction works. They also tie in historical notes of why the factions are doing this or that. And so that's helpful. But even still, if you're brand new to it, it's still very complex and daunting. And I would say just like something like 18XX, if you have someone you know who, and John Company also, like these kind of games, like if you have, I highly recommend finding someone who knows how to play it that you, that can teach you and you can play your first game with, because once you do that, it won't feel as complex, but learning it on your own is very complex.
I agree. Like before I'd played anything 18X, you know, XX, then, you know, I was put off by that too a little bit, just because it is so vast and so daunting. But then, you know, we had a friend that was willing to teach us. I don't know what the first 18XX game we played was, but, you know, and it sort of springboards you into being able to play all these other games that you never thought, even really knew existed.
Exactly. And I really love that you guys did that whole 18XX episode too. Because there's not a lot of helpful content out on YouTube about 18XX games for how cool they can be, you know?
Yeah. I know there are some people, you know, covering 18XX games, and I really appreciate those. And I also appreciate like Cube Rails games because they are a more approachable. I mean, they're not 18XX, but they give you that little flavor
a little
in
bit. Yeah, shared
plunge
incentive,
into deep end.
Root building.
Yes,
and
yeah,
stocks.
Exactly.
Yeah. I love Cube Rails too. Yeah.
Mm.
But that's cool. So here's the plan. You and Efka have to come out to LA and stay with us. And then I will teach you a coin game. Because I think you guys would enjoy it.
Okay. All right. Nice. Yeah.
Done deal. So anyway, that is Red Dust Rebellion. What's the next game on your list?
The next game on my list is Undergrove by Elizabeth Hargrave and Mark Wooten. The publisher is AEG. The player count is 1-4. And again, I know that there are mitigations if you're playing with a lower player count where you play it with like automa almost. But this game, it, first of all, excited me because I really appreciate Elizabeth Hargrave as a designer.
Heck yeah.
I really appreciate what she's done in the past and how she's bringing... It's a bit like what we were saying about history, you know, bringing nature into the forefront a little bit more. And I know you said you're sick of nature games now, but...
no, but I still appreciate, these mushroom games,
And there's like 500 mushroom games coming out this year. But,
we're all going to learn more about mushrooms.
Well, that's the idea, right? But in this game, you are playing as... you're not playing as a mushroom. You are actually playing as a tree, as a Douglas fir tree. But you are trying to work symbiotically with the mushrooms that you will put out, all the players will put out on this kind of modular board. You will build the board over time in order to build your own, or grow your own rather, trees and from roots and seedlings that you will be planting. all the actions will give you different things to do. Like you will be adding mushrooms to the board, you will be adding seedlings, roots, and activating mushrooms, which they will give you different things that your trees will need to grow, like phosphorus or nitrogen, or you know, these kinds of different things. And what I love about this particular game is how close it is to what is probably actually happening. I'm not saying that it's like a nature book,
right,
in
right,
the
right,
form
right.
of a board game, but I think it comes across a lot better than some other games that have the theme for the mechanism's sake. Do you understand what I mean?
Yes,
so,
yes.
Like she made sure that all the mushrooms that are included in the game have some relationship in real life to the fir trees. Like, so it's not mushrooms that will grow by oak trees, it's mushrooms that will grow by fir trees.
Yeah. I know she's so very passionate about like mushrooms and studying
them.
She
really
stuff.
Is. Yes.
So that definitely comes
and
through.
And nature in general.
Yeah.
Right. So there, I love learning about nature. I love learning about mushrooms. I know nothing about mushrooms. So I'm looking forward to learning all the different names of the mushrooms. There's one that I saw that's called the belly button hedgehog, which I just thought it was the cutest name in the world. So, you know, it just looks like such a lovely game. And I love how kind of interactive it is because you are all building the board together.
That's cool.
And there are so many different actions that you can take, benefits that you're getting from these different mushrooms. So you're thinking about, like, there's not a singular path to kind of victory. You know, there's all different things you can be doing.
That's
and
awesome.
There's not a clear idea of what that is. And I love that in a game where you have this kind of freedom, this kind of sandboxy feel of do anything you like, you know, but do it well, and that's how you will win the game.
I thought it looks
beautiful because the artwork's by Beth Sobel, right? So it just looks great. And I always flip-flop between wanting kind of cute, fluffy looking art. So there is a game coming out called Wild Gardens, which
you know
the game.
I like those
almost,
popping colors
almost made
on that,
my list. I love that too. It almost made my list but not quite, but it's still something I'm interested in. Maybe that's my honorable
there
mention,
you go.
I don't know, but but kind of that style of art, because I find it very enticing, and flip-flopping between this kind of almost Victorian botanical artwork.
Yeah.
And this is what the game has. And it just looks so beautiful, and it's so well representing all the mushrooms in the game. It just looks great, and it looks really engaging.
Yeah. And you're so right. Like and Elizabeth is just such a great expert, because she also had last year the Fox Experiment. And she might have co-designed that one with, but someone was talking about it and just like, I don't know stuff about foxes like that. And it's so cool that through playing this board game, you can kind of like just learn little tidbits,
right?
You know, like,
right. What I also love about this game is that it's not focused around you, because it's the mushrooms that are the important bit. You're playing as the tree.
Yeah.
Right. And because I think, you know, most games that you play, you're playing like, as the character,
right?
Or as,
I'm picking,
you know,
mushrooms. Yeah, that kind of thing.
Whereas this is very much your relationship with nature and relationship mechanically with the rest of the board.
Very,
you know,
cool.
And the rest of the players that are playing the game. So I love that about it.
Cool. So that is Undergrove. Okay. So I have two more on my list, and these are the two that I was just like, oh yeah, I'm ready. So the first one I'll mention is the Gaia Project expansion, The Lost Fleet, and it's designed by Helge Ostertag and Jans Drogelmuller. I probably messed up the pronunciation on that.
I thought that came across really well.
Oh, thanks. Okay, good.
You sounded confident.
All right, thanks. A little vote of confidence there. I appreciate that. It is published by Fjordland Spiel, and I think Capstone is going to be bringing it into the U.S.
Right.
1 to 4 players. I just kind of fell in love with Gaia Project this year. Like, I played it once, a partial game years ago, and kind of walked away like, I think I had a bad teach and just a bad experience, but I was also like, I like Terra Mystica theme better, so I'm just going to keep playing Terra Mystica. And I revisited Gaia Project this year, and I just fell in love. I love all these Terra Mystica games. I love Age of Innovation. But so
we're still yet to play that.
Oh,
so we're looking forward to that.
Yeah, I hope you enjoy it. If you like Terra Mystica and Gaia Project, I think you're gonna really enjoy it. But this will have like new factions. There's a new like layout to the map that's gonna feature like holes where ships of the Lost Fleet and new planet types are gonna get placed. There's also, they're going to have these new small sector tiles, like these edge sectors. And just like, I know I have not played, I've probably played Gaia Project, you know, probably 8 or so times this year, you know, some solo.
This year.
Yeah, this year, this year.
This year.
You know, like KeyForge, there's certain things that I do go deep with. Yeah.
Wow.
But I know, like, I still have so much exploration to do of like the different factions in the base game, but I'm still so excited about this expansion. And
that's allowed, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. I think it'll just like add some fun new twists. Also, another thing that I'm going to play at some point in the near future is somebody came up with a variant for Gaia Project where you mix in Twilight Imperium factions.
Ooh.
So I actually went on Etsy and bought the player boards, like their mats, for these like TI factions to play this like variant.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. So I've been really excited. I haven't had time to, but like I'm really excited to try that too. Cause yeah, I love Gaia Project. So how could this not be on my list? Especially when I found out it's finally coming out in 2024.
Amazing. I still to this day don't quite understand how the bowls work and the way the pips move. Like I've played
Terra Mystica,
I've played Gaia Project.
Yeah.
I still have to ask, is this right? Am I doing this right?
So yeah.
You know, that's a puzzle in my brain forever, I think.
it is like tough to wrap your head around. You know,
I'm so busy concentrating on this other thing.
There's lots to think about this.
Let me play my game.
Yeah. Cool. Yeah. I hope you guys get to play Age of Innovation soon too.
That sounds really cool, and the fact that there are like Etsy made Twilight Imperium factions.
Somebody came up, and it's like they're really fun, like because they took the Twilight Imperium factions, but like made them. Like tied their abilities to more, you know, to the Gaia Project game. And I'm like,
yeah, of course, yeah.
You know, I love Twilight Imperium too. So like to mash up like two of my favorites, I think, it's, you know, it might be just like silly and ridiculous, but I'm going to try it.
But you're going to find that out for yourself.
I'm going to find out. I think that's on my
and
list.
There's nothing wrong with silly.
Yeah.
Sometimes,
yeah.
You know, games are there for fun.
Exactly. And I'm going to put this on next month. If I haven't done it, definitely like, as my birthday week of games. Oh, Gaia Imperium, I'm calling it.
Nice.
Twilight Project, Gaia Imperium, something like that. But anyways, so that is my number two game, Gaia Project, The Lost Fleet expansion. All right, Elaine, we got one more.
So, like I said, this is not like my number one game that I'm looking forward to.
Sure,
it's
sure,
just
yeah.
One of the games I'm looking forward to. So this is the Morrison Game Factory. Designer is Lauren Bellow. Publisher is Post Curious. And it says the player count is 1-4. And again, I don't know quite how that works with lower player counts or higher player counts. I don't know if you've played anything by Post Curious before.
I have not, but I bought something. I think the Emerald of... Because someone told me about it. Oh, this is going to be wild. Actually, I'm thinking back to, it might have been the first episode of 2023 where I was.
That's nice synergy, right?
Yeah, that is really, because I think that was the first time I heard of any Post Curious games. And I bought one, but I ended up giving it to a friend as a gift before I actually tried it.
Okay.
So I do need to try, because they seem like really cool, puzzly, like unique production.
Yes.
Kind of.
Yeah, don't they just? So, I mean, I love Exit and Unlock and all those kind of escape room in a box type games, but the Post Curious games I've never played. I keep seeing them and they appeal to me, but I've just never I don't know, taken the plunge, is like that kind of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
To play one of these, right? There's a lot of narrative in it. It's very story based, which really appeals to me because I like something that has kind of a story tie-in overall, yeah. rather than just something pasted on, I suppose, that you actually feel like you're immersed in this story. I like an immersive yeah. experience. So why I was put off by the other Post Curious games is because I heard that you had to like use the internet a lot for them, and the idea of kind of Googling things or whatever was a little bit put me off. I remember playing a prototype a long, long, long time ago of an escape type room where you had to actually ring a phone number that they'd provided Whoa. For you. And I don't like ringing people in real life. I don't even like ringing the dentist or whatever, yeah, right? Yeah. So to have to do it in my leisure time really put me off. So I didn't want to do that. But this... It seems to have a proprietary website. Like there is one website, you put all the information into it and it's all contained. You're not things or ringing people.
Randomly Googling people, yeah.
I don't know if that was an element of the other games because I haven't played them, but that's kind of what was in my head and that's kind of what put me off. So, but this one is, you are in a factory. You've come across this factory and you found the Morrison Game Factory in Shrink on a broken down production line. The factory is completely broken down, but for some reason this game is there.
Sitting there
and
in
there's
Shrink.
One copy of it just sitting there in Shrink. And you've opened it up and it's lots of puzzles that you have to kind of get yourself Neat. Stuck into. And what I like about it too is that about all of these games, what appeals to me is that they are very tactile. And I like you were saying earlier, you know, I love tactility in a game that's not too fiddly. Mm. My fingers don't work that well all the time. So having very tiny bits sometimes puts me off. But this looks like, you know, there's big pouches and zips and, you know, physical puzzles to do. So that really, really appeals to me.
I actually saw this at PAX Unplugged, and I talked to Rita Orlov, who started Post Curious, and most Post Curious games are designed by her, and this one's a different designer, Lauren Bellow, yes. like you said. But this sounds so cool, and I think, yeah, this is definitely like one of those like smaller companies that's doing really cool stuff, and everybody I know who's into puzzly games like that, like those kind of escape room games, who have tried any of these Post Curious games have had nothing but like really cool things to say. Yeah. So I need to try one at some point. And I love what you were saying about like, yeah, it seems really immersive because you're like, you're in this story that's part of the game experience. And yeah, that's super cool. So that is the Morrison Game Factory. And the last game on my list, you know, I had to do it. I'm bringing Cole Worley back. Arcs, Arcs, Arcs. I'm very excited about Arcs. This is a game coming out from Leader Games, 2 to 4 players. It is a space opera game that can be played in less than 2 hours, and it fuses like that space opera kind of type of game with that epic feel, but with trick-taking, card-driven actions where you're doing all sorts of stuff. You're like moving your ships around, building ships and star bases and stuff like that. And, you know, there are the way the scoring works is really cool because whoever plays the lowest card, I think, if I recall, they get to pick whatever suit card they play, a certain objective is going to get a point value. And now everybody's like kind of like competing to score that. And you maybe want to time it so that you're already ahead in whatever that scoring objective is before you trigger it. But then everybody else is not going to sit there and let you just get all the points. So I played this when I went to San Diego History Con back in November. And I was just like, wow, this is so cool. This is like one of those games, because I am a Cole Worley fan. So like usually I'm like, I really? Want to play everything. I want to play everything, but I'm also not one of those people who like follow every bit of detail on like Kickstarter campaigns. I'm just like, when it's available, I'll play it then and I'll find out all the details. But it was really cool to kind of get a sneak preview of it. Mm. And it, I'm telling you, I'm, you know, I have some, like, a friend of mine who, like, none of Cole's games have really, like, hit with him. But I'm like, I think he's going to, like,
this
really
might be the one.
I think this is going to be the one. So if you're, if you're, like, my, my friend out there, like, and you're kind of, you know, some of Cole's games haven't really hit with you, this one might be worth checking out. Especially if, like, that idea of a reduced time space opera game, but very, like, inventive that it uses, like, some trick-taking card mechanisms for your action selection. Neat.
It sounds incredible. Because, you know, when you have a game like Twilight Imperium that takes a long time and needs a lot of players, it doesn't come to the table as often as you might want it to.
Right.
So to have a smaller version of that is, it sounds amazing.
Yeah, where you get you get that kind of experience, and, you know, they're modules and stuff, and you can play it as a campaign too. Like, I think the campaign sounds like it's going to be cool, but, like, I just played just a standalone game of it. But yeah, the other, like, really neat thing I'll bring up about it is the way combat works is very cool, because there's no like, the defensive person doesn't do anything. It's all driven by the offensive person.
Right.
And you can kind of choose which type of dice that you're going to roll, and they have different, you know, there are different risks and rewards to using different types of dice. And so I thought that was really neat, and also is, like, one of the things that probably speeds up the gameplay, because it's not like, okay, Elaine, now you have to roll for your dreadnoughts. Okay, now I have to roll for my little fighter ships. It's like, nope, you know, whoever the active player is, pick which dice you want to use, and, you know, wherever you're battling, and roll them and see what happens, you know?
That sounds great.
Yeah, sounds so really I'm pretty excited about ARCs.
And you know they're going to have done it well.
Oh, yeah.
That kind of combat, so.
Yeah. Totally, totally. Awesome, awesome, awesome. You, Aileen, you've put, like, so many cool games on my radar, and then just
and
reinforced.
You have mine, too.
Yeah, and then, like, the ones that I knew about that I was, like, already thinking, like, yeah, that's going to be cool. You kind of reinforced my excitement for those,
nice.
Too.
Nice.
But, yeah, it's been a blast talking to you, and,
yeah,
you know,
you
I really, like, look for, I wish we lived closer so we could actually, like, play games together and hang more.
You are welcome to Nottingham anytime.
Oh, thank you. I do. I need to make my way out there. One day I'm going to take you up on that, and we'll...
Nice.
We'll play some games together.
Maybe someday we'll make it to California too.
Yes, you always have a place to stay if you're in
Thank you.
The LA area. Thank you. Assuming I still live here too. I'm like, how would that work if, like, 10 years from now you come, you're like, Candace, I'm ready to stay in LA, and I'm like, oh, this is awkward.
I mean,
we're in
hopefully
Seattle.
We'll keep in contact, right? Yeah. Yeah. Won't just turn up at your door, like, knock, 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 and, like, some little old lady answers the door, and she's like, go away. Who are you? I'm like, do you want to play board games? maybe I could, you know, get someone else to play board games. I always feel like now we don't do review copies at all.
Okay.
We are out of review. We are not doing them at all.
Cool. Good,
I always
good.
Feel like I'm a little bit more behind the curve. But so it was really great to hear, you know, your picks, because quite a lot of those I'd not heard of. On the ones, like you said, you know, the ones I had heard of, I was like, yeah, okay, this sounds great.
Right.
So
awesome. Well, yeah, it's been so great talking to you, and thanks again for being here.
Thank you. It's been a blast.
You've been listening to the Board Game Geek podcast, produced and edited by Candace Harris. Special thanks to Matt Fonda for editing and mixing our music. Be sure to visit us on the web at BoardGameGeek.com. You can also find us on YouTube, Twitter, Blue Sky, Instagram, Facebook, TikTok, and Twitch under Board Game Geek. You can reach us by email at podcast@BoardGameGeek.com. Thanks for listening, and happy gaming!